Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Kate Faulkner.
Hello, hope you're okay. Thank you for downloading today's podcast on Thursday, the 14th of November. Coming up today, we'll hear from the creator of stackable pods that have been installed in Ashford to help tackle homelessness. We'll also tell you which part of Kent is the most affordable in the whole of the southeast. But first, taking a look at our top story today, an inquest into the death of a grieving mum from Ashford has found she died from an unintentional overdose of prescription medication. Camilla Crofton died 6 months after the death of her 9-year-old son, Felix. Nicola has the details for the Kent Online podcast. Nicola, what do we know about Felix's death and how Camilla had been coping?
Well, 9-year-old Felix suffered a fatal asthma attack in November last year. The football-mad youngster, described as a confident, funny and happy boy, died at the family home in Magazine Road. Camilla had understandably been struggling to cope with the loss and, in particular, she'd been finding it difficult to sleep. She'd been taking prescription medication to help with insomnia.
And this is the same prescription medication that was found in her system after she died.
That's right. Toxicology results showed the amount of sedative medication in her blood was high, but below what is considered a fatal level. However, the coroner found on the balance of probabilities, her death was likely caused by toxicity of the prescription drug.
Although the inquest found she'd most likely not intended to overdose.
Yes, that's right. On the evening of May the 23rd, she'd sent messages to a friend saying she didn't want to be here anymore and that she had the pills, but friends and family say she had reassured them that she would not take her own life during conversations about suicide. They say she had told them she was very sad but not depressed and that she knew the difference. The inquest also heard she had had beauty appointments and social events in her diary in the days after her death. Police have also confirmed there was no third party involvement.
Thanks, Nicola.
Kent Online News.
A teenager's been arrested after a six-second police chase ended in a crash near Ashford. Officers were called in the early hours of Tuesday following reports a car had rammed into the front of a shop in Sittingbourne High Street. The vehicle fled and later failed to stop for police in High Holden before crashing through the outdoor area of an Indian restaurant. A 19-year-old man has been questioned and released on bail. A teenager has been locked up following a motorbike crash that killed a 19-year-old in Medway. Job Stanley Treby passed away in hospital 12 days after the collision in Revenge Road in Lordswood in October 2021. Scott Chapman from Phoenix Road in Chatham was just 16 at the time and admitted causing death by dangerous driving. He'll serve 3 years and 4 months in a young offenders institute. A Chatham man has been sent to prison after threatening to kill his neighbours for hanging party decorations. Philip Goldson armed himself with a knife after being enraged at noises coming from the upstairs flat and aggressively confronted them on the doorstep. This is the moment he was arrested.
Hi mate, you alright? Can you show me your hands? Put the knife down, that's it. Come outside, step outside. Step outside, step outside, come on. Step outside.
You're under arrest for a fray. You don't have to.
The 57-year-old from Coronation Road has been locked up for 2.5 years. A man's been arrested on suspicion of criminal damage and attacking an emergency worker in Faversham. Police were called to St Mary's Road yesterday afternoon and a man was apparently seen bashing at the door of a property. A Kent charity has had to spend more than £4,000 to replace 3 boilers stolen from bungalows for people in need. Bosses of the group behind the project in Milton Street in Swanscombe say it was targeted by thieves who disabled CCTV cameras and knew where the keys to the houses were being kept. They've been forced to push back the launch date. Kent police have confirmed they are investigating.
Kent Online News.
A Kent pharmacist has told the Kent Online podcast they have no choice but to take collective action over a lack of funding. They're restricting hours from January, so many won't be open in the evenings or at weekends. Lucy has been speaking to Amish Patel. He's the owner of Hodgson Pharmacy in Longfield.
Funding has gone down for nearly a decade. Nearly one pharmacy a day across the country is closing. We've already seen across Kent nearly 20 pharmacies close in the last couple of years, which is coming close to 10% of the pharmacies closing in Kent. Now, these are significant numbers which will be impacting patients. I think people forget pharmacies offer more than just medication. We also offer a lot of advice. You've got the Pharmacy First service now where patients can also just walk in or be referred by the GP for 7 conditions such as infected sore throats, sinusitis, shingles, infected ears. So there's a whole load more that pharmacies do that take pressure off the NHS, and yet we're just not getting remunerated and making losses. And as I said, so many pharmacies are now closing, myself included, are heading in that direction to that threat of closure. And we just need to do something now to avoid that.
I know a lot of the pharmacists who were balloted for this collective action said they felt they had no choice. Is that something you would agree with?
Yeah, exactly that. We are just at the end of our tether. We have no choice but to look to take action. And it's not wanting to inconvenience patients. It is to really highlight to the government we can't do more. And we look at the actions that we're looking to take. A lot of them are actually in support of trying to keep the businesses slightly more viable. So, for example, reducing hours will make the pharmacy that a little bit more viable, not offering so much of what we did for free for so long. So, for example, people think that a delivery service is paid for by the NHS, and it's not. It's pharmacies taking on that cost themselves. Where our profits have dwindled and dwindled and dwindled to the point that we're making losses, we can't offer these services anymore. So it is also making noise, but also to drive our own efficiency so that we can hopefully keep our doors open that little bit longer till the government sort this out once and for all.
What kind of challenges are you facing as a pharmacist?
Numerous ones. So like I said, about 10 years ago, the challenge began really when the government first announced they were reducing our funding. Over the last 7-8 years, we've not even had a 1% increase on that funding to account for inflation, the year-on-year increases on minimum wage, the most recent budget with the new minimum wage and national insurance increase, for example. So we have had to incur all those costs with no additional funding. Then second to that, we've had medicine drug shortages, for example, which are at the highest level that I've seen since being qualified for nearly 16 years. And that's a challenge. We're spending more hours a day trying to source medication. It's admin time rather than caring for a patient. I'm having to try and find medication and get it in so patients are not going without. You've got additional challenges with regards to just general workload. Prescription numbers have gone up and up and up. People are living longer. We're dispensing more medication than we've ever done before because people are living longer and they need that to keep living. So all this culminates in a significant amount of additional workload, but for reduced funding again. I give an example. I'm a second generation pharmacist. I'm very fortunate to be in the position I am and inherited my business from my father. My father got paid more per item on a prescription 20 years ago than what I'm getting now. And you think, how can they get paid more 20 years ago to today? Yet we're doing so much more. And I think patients value how much more we're doing as well. It's just crazy.
The government insists they're committed to community healthcare. A Labor minister says there have been 52 people smuggling convictions since July's general election. Lord Hanson's told the House of Lords that 23 of those were running small boats across the channel. He says the government's committed to meeting its international responsibilities and smash the criminal gangs. Canterbury Food Bank has launched its Christmas appeal ahead of expected high demand over the festive season. Already this month, they've seen a 14% increase in demand for household parcels. The reverse Advent calendar campaign is now urging people to donate one much needed item per day. Martin Ward is from the food bank.
116,500 meals in the last calendar year. That's the equivalent going out in the parcels. In the last month, that's 12,500, more than 50% of which were for children. So it's pretty big numbers.
And those ones for children, do they go to households or schools, or how do you get it to the children?
Both. Through the distribution method that we've got here, every client will be assessed as to whether a single adult, couple, whether there's a family, and so on. And for the family situation, then there will be extra supplies put into the parcels destined for that family to support the children. Separately from that, we run a school holiday parcel service. So when we come up to school holidays, then there's an extra flurry of activity in the warehouse that you see here, packing bags specifically for children who would otherwise be at school, probably on free school meals, who will then be at home. And then the parcels will be there to support them during the holiday.
there's a lot of talk after a recent Labour government as well and what they're going to be doing. We've seen the budget, the winter fuel allowance, the impact that's going to have on a lot of people. So what are you expecting to see here because of that recent budget as well?
I wish I had a crystal ball that I could predict all of that. I think I can only answer that by saying that we're coming into the winter. That's when, of course, people have to make a choice between heating and eating. It's a bit of a hackneyed phrase, I know, but there are real choices. If you're on a limited budget, you have to choose between keeping yourself warm or keeping yourself fed. Evidence, all the evidence that we have shows that this time of the year, as it starts to get colder, as we come up to Christmas, because of all the pressures of Christmas as well, then you will find that demand will increase. So I don't have a crystal ball, but we're poised and we're ready to cope with any increase that might come throughout the winter and then of course into next year.
And then do you think visits today from famous faces, do you think that really boosts sort of, will you see, I don't know if you've had anybody come in before, show their face, and then you've had lots of donations, lots of volunteers. How does that work? And what impact have you seen that have in the past or maybe now?
Let me answer that quite simply by saying Canterbury Food Bank exists to support the local community. We can do that because the local community supports us. So there is this sort of virtuous circle, if you like, that through the food donations, through money donations, that we can then purchase food to supplement the parcels. Then we have the wherewithal to put into the parcels. Parcels go out, so we're supporting the local community. Anything that we then do through personalities coming in here to pack a parcel and to help us maintain that visibility within the local community is to be welcome, because then the community will support us back, you know, through the donations, and both financial and food that we can then put into the parcel. So it all starts again. So we really welcome people coming in to show interest and wanting to support us and raise our profile.
How worried are you about this winter?
I think no more worried than I've been in previous winters, because we know that really whatever gets thrown at us, we can actually support that. So in terms of, am I worried, does it keep me up at night? No, it doesn't, because I know that we can do it. But it does concern me that as life goes on, there are still people in what is quite an affluent society in the UK still requiring the help of food banks. So, I mean, that is more the concern. I think whatever prevailing conditions throw at us, I'm pretty confident that we will be able to support that. And people should just not be afraid to come to us for support, because they will get it.
8 people have been fined more than £6,000 for littering in Medway. The offenders were all caught dropping cigarette butts between February and March this year and failed to pay their fixed penalty notices. Councils say it shows littering in the towns will not be tolerated. Meanwhile, 2 dog walkers in Folkestone who failed to pick up after their pets have been fined hundreds of pounds. One man has been ordered to pay more than £200 for leaving mess in Tram Road, and another has to pay nearly £500 for a similar offence in the Old High Street. It's part of council's zero tolerance approach to cleaning up the streets. The Range has bought Homebase after the home giant went into administration. Up to 70 stores are part of the deal, securing around 1,600 jobs. There are 8 branches in Kent, but it's not known if they're among those saved. Work is set to get underway on the restoration of Folkestone Lees Lift. The Grade 2 lifted Cliffside Railway carried passengers between the promenade and the seafront before it closed in 2017. More than £6 million is being spent to bring it back into use. It's hoped it could be up and running by next summer.
Kent Online News.
A Medway man who's been diagnosed with stage 4 prostate cancer is backing calls for a national screening program. Keith Woodward from Rochester has been documenting his journey on YouTube to try and raise awareness and give hope to other men who have the disease. It's been in the news recently after cyclist Chris Hoy announced his case was terminal. Keith has been chatting to Lucy about his experience.
When you get diagnosed with prostate cancer, it sounds a little bit like a death sentence, especially advanced cancer, but here I am now 3 years later, and I know a lot of other people that have that are alive, you know, for 10 years or more.
And do you think there's enough awareness of the signs and symptoms of prostate cancer?
No, not at all. No. If I speak to anyone, my colleagues, anyone that I talk to have no idea, really. And like myself, I had no idea when I was first diagnosed. It just hit me like a ton of bricks. I didn't even think it could have been, you know, that way.
Yeah. What are some of the signs and symptoms for men to look out for?
For me personally, the first signs I had was my bladder. So like when I was going to the toilet, my stream just started to go very, very slow. And I was getting up in the night more frequently than usual. That went on for a little while, and then I started developing some pain in my back, which was unfortunately diagnosed as sciatica, and it just got worse and worse as time went on. But for even for some people, I know there isn't any symptoms. But I think people, once they, if they realise that, you know, at a certain age, if you are getting up in the night, if your bladder's changed for any reason, there could be something wrong.
So at first, even the doctors didn't realise that it was prostate cancer.
No, unfortunately, it was during COVID. So I had a phone call with a doctor when I first started getting the backache, the back problems started to affect my work. I had to go on a waiting list for about 6 weeks to have a phone call because of COVID. And then I actually got called in, and I was given a prostate examination, and I was told everything was fine. There was nothing found. But unfortunately, I wasn't given any blood test or anything. And I've spoke to other people that have had the same issue. Some GPs, I think, don't like to, for some reason, give the blood test. I'm not sure why, but that's what happened with me.
That's really worrying to hear that these cases are potentially being missed. Do you think something like a national screening program would help pick up more cases and maybe catch them earlier?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I think we need to do it. I was so shocked when I looked into it that you know, 1 in 8 men are likely to get prostate cancer. If they're a black man, it's 1 in 4. Which is incredible, and I had no idea. I had no idea about it.
Keith works as a driving instructor for emergency workers and says he wants to show you can still have a normal life after diagnosis. Follow Kent Online for a first look inside new pod-style homes that have been built on Ashford to tackle homelessness. Fortis House includes 23 properties and will give people somewhere to live for up to 3 years while they find permanent accommodation. Dr. Rehan Kodabakis is from Zed Pods. He's been speaking to reporter Leanne Castle.
We are an environmental-led organisation, so we try and design and build zero carbon or zero carbon in operation homes. And when we do that, we bring that all the way back to the strategy of the initial concept of the site. And we don't build any more land, it's not possible. So we're looking at how do we use those sites that local authorities might already have and might be underperforming or undervalued in terms of their existing land usage. And that's why we go to brownfield sites and sites like this. This was originally a car park, and now it's going to be 23 social and affordable rented homes. So the reason that we do that, it means that we're reusing sites that are either underutilised and we're not having to touch those greenfield sites. And that brings that environmental ethos right into the level of what we do for the choice of sites that we then develop. We then do everything to be as low as energy, as most energy efficient as possible, and to use the little amounts of energy as possible. That not only means that we're providing zero carbon in operation homes, but also some of the cheapest and most cost efficient homes to run for the tenants that move in. Because they're social tenants as well, their disposable income will be a lot lower. So if we can make the buildings that are the cheapest homes to run and to operate, it can really have a big effect on their quality of life and their disposable income. And so we put solar panels, we put battery storage, and we use a heat pump system that provides hot water, space heating, and ventilation requirements, make really nice, healthy internal environments. We play around with a lot of lovely daylight and bring as much daylight as possible to create healthy internal conditions. And we also use things like triple glazing to reduce the energy losses, but also prevents any drafts coming into the building as well. And that means it's a really nice place to live, very, very easy to live in terms of technology, but also people within the social and affordable rental scheme can also participate in the low carbon agenda. So these are some of the most efficient buildings to live in, and it will really help with environmental impact, offset some of the carbon through other parts of the housing stock as well, and generate some of the best real high quality places to live that are also the best for the environment.
And how long will they last for?
So these will last as long as any traditional normal build homes. We make sure that we go through a build off-site property assurance scheme that shows that they will last for two mortgage cycles, and then a well-maintained building will last 100 years plus.
How does this scheme compare to any others that you've done? What makes it so unique?
So this is one of the largest schemes we've done in such a tight site on a flood zone, or such a difficult to build scheme. It's got 23 different apartments, and they're spread out for a different, the largest one is a three bed, there's one bed and two beds in as well. And so the types of tenants that will be moving in, the way that we've done this, how we've integrated into the local area, and how we've brought this site that wouldn't really have been used for anything else apart from a car park into play for a housing scheme that will really provide very high quality, affordable additional housing to the original, to the existing housing stock for Ashford Borough Council.
The council leader has called the project a beacon of hope as they try to cut their temporary accommodation bill, which has more than doubled. Dover has been named as the most affordable town in the southeast. Research from property website Zoopla found the average cost of a home is £250,000. That's well below the average for the region, which is just over £400,000. Sheerness is second on the list, while Chatham comes in fourth. We've been hearing how Kent's largest ever solar farm could power 20% of homes in the county. Plans have been released for the facility on Romney Marsh along the A259, which would be the size of 840 football pitches. An application for development is yet to be formally submitted, but bosses say it could be years until they're finally approved. Dover's Roman painted house has been added to Historic England's Heritage at Risk Register. There are concerns over the vulnerability of some of the wall paintings, which date back to the early 3rd century. Council bosses say they are working with Historic England to improve conservation and ensure it's part of Dover's future regeneration projects. A petition to keep the traditional pie and mash company serving up grub at the Gamecock pub in West Kingsdown has reached 800 signatures. The pie and mash van has been parked up outside the village pub for the last 13 years. New management is due to take over next year, and there are fears they'll opt for an in-house menu. Bosses say they can't comment on what future arrangements might be. And a film starring Barry Keoghan that was shot in Kent is being tipped for BAFTA and Oscar nominations. Bird is set in Gravesend and follows the story of a single dad and his 12-year-old daughter. Filming took place across North Kent last summer, and it's now out in cinemas.
Kent Online Sport.
Just a brief look at some cricket news today, and a memorial service will be held for Kent cricket legend Derek Underwood at Canterbury Cathedral next year. The 78-year-old died in April. Kent was the only club side he played for during his career. The service will be held in March. And if you missed it yesterday, Coco Streets has been named as Kent's women's vice-captain for the 2025 season. She came through the Female Talent Pathway Scheme and will play alongside skipper Megan Belt in their T2 squad. The 22-year-old says she's thrilled to be given the opportunity. That's all from us today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Threads. You can also get the details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And while you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. It gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Kate Faulkner, all one word, at the checkout, you'll get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.